It may not feel like it yet, but it is officially fall. This hour, we'll talk about spring blooming bulbs you might want to think about planting in the coming weeks. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in just a few minutes, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, will be here along with Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. We will talk about spring blooming bulbs and some of the fall garden chores that maybe should be on your list. It's also our fall membership drive. I want to give you an update on the last hour. We did meet our goal for On Point today, so thank you so much if you were a part of meeting that goal. Emily and Catherine are cheering silently right now. We would love to hear from you, however, if you have not yet made your call. It's time to invest in your public radio service. The number to call, 800-235-2665 or iowapublicradio.org. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and although it doesn't feel like fall, it is fall, and it's time to start making plans. Aaron Stile is here today, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Hello, Aaron.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you again.
And Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran is also here. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. And it sure doesn't feel like time to start thinking about planting bulbs, but it is definitely time to start thinking about it, right?
Yeah, it is. October is traditionally the month we recommend planting all of our spring blooming bulbs, like tulips and daffodils and many of the others that come up first thing next season. And it's almost October already.
And if the weather stays warm like this, does that change when we should plant?
Not necessarily. I think occasionally you'll have some bulbs do more. It probably benefits them more than hurts them. I mean, they'll get a lot more opportunity to grow roots and to kind of settle in before the winter comes. It also gives the gardener a lot more opportunity to get more stuff in because the weather is better. And often it can be hard to find, between football games and everything else that's going on in the fall, it can be hard to find time to get this project done. So the nicer the weather, the more likely you can get it done.
Right. And of course, if you wait too long, you wind up out there on just the most terrible day.
Yeah. And I've never done that.
Me neither. Me neither.
So when we're thinking about planting spring bulbs, it's easy to do a lot of daydreaming. And sometimes when you're shopping for the bulbs, it's easy to get kind of carried away. What do you recommend as far as making a plan?
Well, I think making sure that you have a good spot for these bulbs is essential. Almost all of our spring blooming bulbs like well-drained soil. And so making sure that you have a spot that has good drainage, that's not necessarily dry, but something that doesn't sit in or hold water is going to be really important. Making sure that there are places that get sun when they're in bloom is going to be beneficial too. And the good news is that most of these plants, like tulips and daffodils and crocus and snowdrops and all these other things, are blooming when most of the trees don't have leaves on them yet. So you can take advantage and actually have a lot more opportunity in your garden to fill in areas that are normally shady in the middle of summer.
Now, I know at Ryman Gardens and many professionally gardened gardens and on landscapes like Iowa State University's campus, et cetera, they go through and dig up all the bulbs that bloomed in the spring. Now, of course, in my yard, I did not do that.
No.
And I did not mark them. I kind of know where they are. So how does that affect your plans? If you know some of the ones that you've planted before will come up, but of course not all.
Right. And, you know, we really only do that with our tulips. Tulips are kind of a specialty bulb because many of the hybrid type tulips that we see in the stores that many of us think of when we think of tulips aren't the greatest perennials. And so we treat them, like at Ryman Gardens, we treat them as annuals. It gives us an opportunity to have a great show and allows us to change them every year. But the rest of the bulbs that we talk about, most by and large, make wonderful perennials that come up every year. And so remembering where they're at is a challenge. I've used golf tees to mark where my bulbs are at because they're relatively inconspicuous, but easy to find if you need to. And most of them are made out of wood, so eventually they biodegrade, which isn't an issue. So they don't become an issue with litter in the garden. And I have also dug into areas and found bulbs and realized, oh, I got to go to a different spot.
All right. Now, when you are coming up with your spots that you want to plant, you know, when we look at these displays, like at Ryman Gardens, you see the amazing rows and rows of tulips, a lot of us, or other bulbs, and a lot of us really can't recreate that in our yard. So what are your recommendations for coming up with a display for spring bulbs that looks beautiful, but if it doesn't all work perfectly, that's not going to be noticeable?
I think one of the biggest suggestions I have for folks is to plant bulbs in drifts or clumps. Even the large bulbs like tulips and daffodils look more impressive in kind of large clumps or drifts, or even small clumps or drifts look better than little soldiers lined up in a location. They have a bigger impact. They many of the bulbs, especially things like daffodils, crocus, squill, a lot of the really early small spring ephemerals like winter aconite or snowdrops will grow and divide and naturalize over the years. And so they'll fill in that area and be even more impressive down the road. But putting them in drifts is going to be, it seems a little counterintuitive because you think spreading them out will make a bigger impact, but actually putting them, the bigger bulbs between 4 and 6 inches apart and the smaller bulbs about 3 to 4 inches apart makes a much bigger impact, even if it is covering a smaller amount of area.
Well, and Richard, I know you kind of have a rule about even and odd numbers. How does that work?
Well, I wouldn't worry about that too much. When you're talking about tulips and daffodils, I would say at least 15 to 20 in a clump, at least. And in those numbers, it doesn't matter if it's 16, 17, it doesn't really matter because you're not really going to count them per se. So smaller things like crocuses, I would say maybe 50 or more in a clump because they're so small. So you want them to be visual where you don't really see the individual flowers, you see the cluster of flowers.
Okay, so make sure there's enough there.
Yes.
That's important. And I know you are planning at Ryman Gardens just a huge tulip display.
Yes, one of the largest we have ever had. We typically plant around 30,000 tulip bulbs every fall, usually the middle of October for our display in spring. This year, we're planting 47,000 tulip bulbs. It's going to be so cool.
That sounds incredible. Now, let's talk about some of the other spring blooming bulbs. You've already mentioned a few that don't necessarily make the top four list for everybody.
I know. My top four list, everybody seems to be familiar with tulips, daffodils, crocus, and hyacinth. And they're nice bulbs. I particularly like daffodils in that group. The other ones, tulips and hyacinth tend to peter out over the years, and crocus are little rodent magnets. So
I've never heard that.
Well, they're a favorite for squirrels and chipmunks and voles and some other things to dig up.
So rabbits too.
Rabbits too. Yeah. So
well,
there are some others.
That explains why my crocuses are now non-existent.
Yeah,
thank you.
They probably got dug up and ate. There are some others that are less critter friendly and make some really wonderful shows and are still relatively easy to find. Things like snowdrops, which come up very early. They're pretty small, but they're some of the first things you see blooming, sometimes even through a small layer of snow. They're little white flowers with a little green dot at the end of the petal. Very, very cute. On Iowa State's central campus, one of the big early spring bulbs is Siberian squill, a wonderful blue flower that naturalizes or creates large drifts over time. Both snowdrops and Siberian squill bloom early enough that you can plant them in your yard. You might have to skip the first mowing so that you don't take off too much of the foliage, but they tend to die back pretty early because they bloom so early. So you can kind of take advantage of planting them that way. Another one of my favorites that's a really early bloomer is winter aconite. It's a little yellow buttercup-shaped flower that has a little ruffle of leaves below it. Also naturalizes, isn't a delicacy for some of the rodents, and is a nice, very early March bloomer, which is always welcomed.
Now, you mentioned a few of these kind of naturalize and spread on their own. I suppose that's a very important thing to know, just in case you don't want that as well.
You know, it's interesting. You know, you may not want it, but most of these bulbs come up, bloom, and disappear so quickly that they don't become a nuisance. And so that the fact that they spread around becomes much more of a positive than a negative. I don't know that I've honestly heard a lot of people, if anybody, say they wish Siberian squill wasn't coming up everywhere. But it can happen, I suppose. So knowing that is important. It also helps you decide where you put them and how you plant them, and hopefully plan for room for them to kind of spread and grow.
All right. And some of these, I can imagine you need to look beyond your local garden center to find.
Yeah, online sources are great. And bulbs ship wonderfully. So getting them from online sources is a great option.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. We've been talking about spring blooming bulbs, but of course, you're welcome to join with any of your questions. 866-780-9100 or Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. They are here to answer your questions. So give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's get started with Lori and Adele. Hi, Lori.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I bought a calla lily this year, and it's in a pot right now. Do I need to plant it in the soil or bring it in for the winter?
Well, they're actually not winter hardy outside, and I guess you could bring them inside and treat it as a house plant if you wish.
Okay.
Or the other option would be to basically let it die back, bring it outside, let it die back after a hard frost or freeze, and then dig up the little bulb and overwinter that indoors.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Lori. And next up, let's go to June in Union County. Hi, June.
Hi. Hi. I have tulips that are naturalized. And after they bloom and the blooms fall off, it's always a battle between me and the person who mows my lawn, who is my husband, of when, how long do you leave the green? Leave the green because that feeds the bulbs. Now
correct.
We have to mow the lawn.
Right. So ideally, you'd wait until that foliage begins to die back before mowing, ideally.
Okay. So yellowing and browning or...
Yeah, if it's starting to turn yellow and brown, it's basically dying back. But if that foliage is still a nice, healthy green, you should leave it if you can.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, June. And Aaron, we didn't talk about this earlier, but is the lovely green foliage something else that you need to take into account when you're planting your bulbs?
Oh, absolutely. And any time you can plant bulbs in and around other perennials or maybe deciduous shrubs, those kinds of things that would be kind of low-key first thing in the spring and then can grow up and hide all of that foliage, that's all the better. And there are some bulbs that take quite some time, well into June, before the foliage officially dies back. I'm thinking of daffodils as a good example of that.
So. Well, and just what June was talking about, that can be a real challenge if you have sort of naturalized them around your lawn and now you want to mow.
Yeah, it can be. And if you do cut them off maybe a week earlier than you should have, they're probably going to be just fine. It's just you don't want to mow them off right after they're done flowering. You want to give them as much time as you possibly can stand before you cut that foliage off.
All right. Let's go to David on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, David.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I think this Friday horticulture thing is just fantastic. My question is, I have some euonymus winter creeper in some ornamental beds that are filled with lots of other plants, and I want to get rid of the euonymus winter creeper. I've been digging it out, and where I can't seem to get it out, I snip it and then dab a little bit of Tordon herbicide on the cut end. Will that Tordon herbicide kill it back?
Well, I would prefer to use something more safe. Roundup would be a better choice, I think, in that Tordon is something that actually could leave the roots of the euonymus and possibly damage some nearby plants. So I would be inclined to use Roundup instead, because Roundup will not do that, or glyphosate. Glyphosate kills only what you basically apply it to. Tordon potentially could possibly damage nearby plants.
Okay. Will the Tordon actually kill the euonymus, though?
It should, yes. Yeah. Yes, it should. My only concern is maybe collateral damage to nearby plants.
Okay.
Possible.
I got a little sponge dauber that I'm putting on.
Okay.
So it's pretty specific where I put it. But okay. The glass of the Roundup, I do the same thing, clip the, put it back as far as I can, and then put it on the growth
right.
ring.
Right. Cut it back as far as you can. And in fact, though, what you might want to do maybe is cut it back to, let's say, 4 to 6 inches from the ground. And then dab your Roundup directly onto that cut surface. And then maybe come back in a week or two and cut off another inch or two and do the same thing. And every time you're doing that, you're getting more and more of the Roundup or glyphosate into the root system. And
okay.
I would do that maybe 2 or 3 times. And that would hopefully kill the root system.
Okay. Thanks very much.
All right, David. Thanks a lot for your call. You can call with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have a question from Kevin in Iowa City. Is it too late to plant lilacs, and how close together can you plant them? I'd like to create a privacy screen or hedge, and I have a few different varieties.
It's not too late to plant those, definitely not. As far as spacing, it kind of depends upon the type or species that you have as far as the mature size. But I would say in most cases, no closer than 6 to 8 feet.
Okay. And if you wanted to create a kind of screen, does it make sense to try to do 2 rows and stagger them if you've got room for that?
Oh, you can do that if you want, or you can just stagger the row itself. They don't have to be in a straight line per se. Or you could put in other shrubs in that screen, too, and make it kind of a mixed hedge or screen.
All right. Aaron, did you have something you wanted
to add
to
that? Well, I was just going to say lilacs tend to sucker anyway, so it will fill in time with no issue.
All right. Here's a question from Sherry. I'm enlarging my garden. I need to remove/kill an area of grass about 4 feet by 20 feet. What's the most effective way to do that?
You could do it various ways. I think the easiest way would be to use Roundup or something of that nature, but you could also use a piece of tarp. Just lay that down and destroy it that way. Just leave it for at least a month or so.
Right, and if she wanted to do that this time of year, she could get the tarp down and get it really secure and just kind of forget about it, right?
Right. They could just put some bricks on the ends of the tarp and just leave it there for a month or two. They could also just go out with a spade and just dig it up.
Yeah.
All right. And this late in the season, would that also still be effective? Because obviously things are going to go dormant in the not too distant future.
Well, we still have another month or so. So if you deprive plants of light, they're going to die in the next month or so.
All right. Here's a question from Tim in Olwine. I planted a rose bush in the spring, and now it's far too big. It took over. What should I do about it?
Well, you could possibly prune it early next spring. Most roses can be pruned in the spring. The other option would be to possibly transplant it next spring, where you do it before it begins to leaf out, and you choose a site where it can grow to a bigger size.
And even if he's tempted, don't prune it this fall. It will likely have some dieback from the winter anyway, and you don't want to put it under more stress by pruning it right before winter.
Okay. Just the way he worded that, I suspect he is tempted. So
mm-hmm.
He's probably not the only one. I'm talking with Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. They are here to answer your questions. We've got a couple lines open for you right now. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Sue is on the line next in Pleasant Hill. Hi, Sue.
Hi, I have two questions.
Okay.
One is about Roundup, and I'm sorry I missed, maybe he's answered it already. I have a flower garden that got totally out of control this year, and I have some quote-unquote flowers that are now 4 and 5 foot tall. Do I want to spray those with Roundup before, or do I want to mow those down and then spray the area with Roundup?
Well, I would be inclined to spray them first.
Okay. All righty. That's great.
And why?
Just so that I kill them. If I mow them off, there's far less foliage available to spray.
Correct. Yeah.
So,
our city parks person explained to me how Roundup works and that I really shouldn't be afraid to use it. So I thought probably I needed to spray them when they were this tall, but I wanted to check with you. The other thing is I have a beautiful wisteria from my grandmother's farm that transplanted, but the original wood arbor that I had for it, it died after 20 years. The last few years, it has grown into a beautiful clump resting on the ground, but I'd like to get it back up. How do I prune it, and when do I prune it? I have a new arbor for it.
Okay. I would probably prune it early next spring before it begins to leaf out.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just try to see if I can maybe bend some of this to the new support or arbor. And
okay.
If I can, then maybe initially tie it to the arbor with some twine or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And prune off what I can't do that to and see what it does.
Okay, because it is, I mean, it's been great ground cover for the squirrels and the rabbits, but it is just totally out of control now. So, all right. And I appreciate, I sent some photos and money and some plant cuttings up last year to your staff, and they were amazing. I really appreciated that help that came, and it was inexpensive, and it was prompt, and you've just got a great group up there. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So, yeah, thanks a lot for your call. You can call with your questions, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Lena is on the line in Clive. Hi, Lena.
Hi there. Thanks. I have a raised bed that this summer I filled with tomato plants. But they all got a fungus on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that I shouldn't replant tomatoes there for a few years. So I'm thinking of filling it with bulbs so I can have cut flowers next spring. I'm wondering if there's any issue with putting bulbs in that bed and if you have any tips for how to do so.
No, there shouldn't be any issue with that at all. You really want to avoid tomatoes or its very close relatives, things like peppers, eggplant, potatoes. And most, if not nearly all of the things you would plant are not going to be closely related to tomatoes, so that won't be an issue. It was a very bad year for blight and other foliar diseases on tomatoes. So even with the best of prevention, most of us had this issue on our tomatoes. Certainly avoiding planting in that area will help a lot. But even if in 4 years you plant tomatoes there again, you probably will still run across this issue. And there are other things you can do like mulch and not doing overhead watering to help with it too.
Great, thanks.
Yeah.
All right, Lena, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to St. Louis, Missouri. Dee is on the line. Hi, Dee.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Sure. What's your question?
Okay. One of my property lines in my backyard, I have a gorgeous row of hornbeams. And they're absolutely beautiful, tall, columnar. They don't take up a lot of space. However, and I believe they were planted fairly close together. They were about 6 feet tall when they were first planted. Now they're as tall as my three-story house, which is wonderful. However, a recent tree person came by to look at a tree that I needed to take down and told me that I should take out every other hornbeam because they're so close together, and I just feel that that would completely destroy that privacy line. But is it necessary to provide more space between the trees. Again, I think they're on 3-foot centers.
Right. I don't think you have to. That since they are close, that may shorten their lifespan because they are kind of crowded. But I don't think you have to remove them. If you did, I think over time they would fill in, most likely, if you choose that option. But I don't think you have to remove the other, every other one.
All right. Aaron, did you have something to add?
Well, I was just going to say, too, that, you know, a lot of times we want to space plants appropriately so that they don't have more issues with things like disease and some of those kinds of things. And hornbeams don't have a lot of foliar diseases or those kinds of issues either. So there's even less motivation for that reason. Now, if these were lilacs or something like that, we would probably recommend it. But I don't think it's necessary.
All right. So if you like them and they look good, let them go?
Is yep. that the, yep.
the moral of the story? All right, we're going to take another short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, along with Richard Geron, horticulturist from Iowa State University Extension. You're welcome to join the conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day, and with me this hour, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. And they are here, of course, to answer your questions. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. One of the great challenges of hosting Horticulture Day is when people write in with questions about plants that I don't know how to pronounce. So this one is from Lynn in Iowa City, and she sent us the scientific name here. So it's something that I would call an autumn crocus, but is it colchicum? Or I'm not sure how to say it.
Colchicum.
Oh, okay.
Colchicum.
Colchicum. Yep. I have colchicum in my yard blooming now. Should I plant more now or in the spring? Also, when should I wrap tree trunks? Those are her two questions.
Okay. You typically plant those in the fall. And with those, you want to get them in the ground as soon as they arrive or you buy them. Because if you don't, they can actually bloom sitting on the kitchen counter.
Oh.
Which is kind of unique. because those plants send up foliage in the spring. The foliage dies back by early summer, and then the flowers come up by themselves in the fall, which is quite unique. So, but you want to plant those in the fall of the year.
Okay, so they are fall blooming, and you
bulbs.
Want to plant
yep.
them now.
Yes, as soon as they arrive.
For next year.
Right.
All right. And what about wrapping tree trunks?
I would probably do that probably by the end of October and have that in place by early November and then remove that material in April.
All right, and let's go back to the phones. Jonathan is on the line in Clive. Hi, Jonathan.
Good morning, and I have been a member since 1989 when I moved here.
Oh, thank you, Jonathan.
I have two questions, one of them rather short. I have some Roundup that has either spent a summer in the garage or a winter in the garage unheated. Is it still useful, or should that be removed from the system?
I would assume it's still usable. What I would probably do is pour a small amount in a glass container or some container that I can see through and see if I see any clumps or that type of thing. If it appears to be nice and clear, no clumps, I'm assuming it's perfectly fine.
Thank you. The second question is that maybe 10 or 15 years ago, my wife brought home from one of the Saturday programs with buying food and plants and whatnot, and I think it was an iris that she had brought. And without thinking much about it, I laid it down in a perennial area, and I realized it came up a few years later. I'd like to either separate the clumps or at least save some, but I find out it's more like looking at pavement when I get down there. It's all grown together in about a 3 by 5 foot area. Other than dynamite, how do I get it up?
I don't think you should use dynamite. I'm going to go on
probably
record.
Probably not.
Will you sign a waiver?
Right. So this is kind of a classic-looking iris with that big fleshy root at the base?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, one of the things I know some gardeners have in their tool arsenal is a reciprocating saw for stuff like this.
Uh-huh.
So the ones you cut through obviously aren't going to be any good, but the ones that are that remain undamaged, you can, you know, divide out and plant. I know that some folks, you know, battery-powered reciprocating saw can be wonderful for them, especially dividing really thick, coarse, thick, fine-root things like hostas and those kinds of things. It makes a lot less work.
It sounds cathartic, too.
Yeah, I think some people really enjoy it, actually. So there's always that as an option. Certainly, I mean, we're getting towards the end of when you would want to transplant iris. If you were going to do it, this weekend would be when you would want to get it done.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. It looks to me like I've got some hard work ahead of me.
Yeah, good luck. I hope you have nice weather for it.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye. Thanks a lot for your call. Hagen is on the line next in Iowa City. Hello.
How are you doing, gang?
Good. What's your question?
Okay, so here's my situation. So Ralston Creek is this creek that runs through Iowa City, snakes through Longfellow neighborhood, and actually feeds the Iowa River. Actually, it's a great little creek. You can bomb it in a kayak if you do it at just the right level. I'd highly recommend that. But the only problem is it's been washing out my backyard. My yard butts up to it, and it's threatening this white pine tree, which, according to the city arborist, could be the largest one in town. And luckily, the city has done this bank improvement project, and so what I got now is riprap down by the creek with compacted clay soil on top of it. And by compacted, I mean they brought in a track hoe and actually put the compactor on there. So I mean, it's really hard soil, but I'd like to plant some bulbs or something on that bank to make the thing hold so it quits washing away, and we can hopefully save this white pine. Didn't know what you guys had for ideas.
Well, that's a tough one.
Right. And I'm thinking what the city did as far as the riprap and the clay probably was the best that can be done. I'm not sure that plant material would help that much more.
Okay.
So I guess I'm just
worried, you know, that every time there's a heavy rain, I mean, the creek comes up,
right,
you know, 6 or 7 feet, and I really feel like that clay is just going to keep washing down.
Well, and it's also probably not particularly nice to look at, is it?
Right.
So is there anything that would grow on it, regardless of whether it would help or not?
That would be difficult.
Some of the, you know, you could try things like some of the grasses. I mean, turf will grow in a lot of places. As long as there's enough light, or some of the more native grasses like switchgrass and some of those other things could take hold in that area without a lot of issue. It will be very difficult for bulbs, not only for you to plant, but the drainage would be really poor. It would be too wet with those flash flood events. So bulbs probably wouldn't be a good option for you, but some of the grasses and those things could work.
And I'm thinking possibly a vine like Virginia creeper, which is a native vine.
And it roots along the stem, right?
It roots along the stem. It holds places, and it's native. It will crawl along the ground. If you go to a wooded area, it kind of covers the ground in many places. And it's kind of a pretty plant. It turns red in the fall. So that might be a possibility, too.
Okay. Well, Hagen, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Lori in North Liberty. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I live out by the Coralville Reservoir. And me and two of my neighbors discovered that in the week before Labor Day, all the apples dropped prematurely off our trees. We have lots of deer, so they got cleaned up immediately, but we had tasted them before we left town, and we know they weren't ready. And I know it was hot that week, and I was wondering if that could possibly cause the fruit to abort.
No, it should not. There are some varieties that tend to drop their fruit prematurely, but the vast majority do not, and the heat per se, even though it may have been in the 80s and 90s, would not have precipitated the fruit drop. So I'm not sure exactly why they did.
But if you have like coddling moth or something like that, can't you get an early fruit drop because of that?
Yeah, but that would be pretty obvious in that the fruit would be misshapen. They just would look awful. And that would be pretty obvious if that were the case. If they look pretty well as far as appearance-wise, then it should not be due to insect infestation, no.
Well, it's a big mystery around here because it happened on three different adjacent acreages. And so we're thinking aliens.
Well, probably not, but who knows?
Well, at least there's nothing you can do about that, right? But I mean, if she did have insect damage or if there's something, I mean, getting the apples out of there is good. So the deer did you a favor.
Yes, they do a good cleanup. I don't like when they eat other things. But, well, I was hoping you might have a logical
suggestion,
Lori. And it's just one of those great mysteries of gardening, I guess.
Better luck next year.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Mike is on the line next in Bettendorf. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. Enjoy your show.
Thanks.
Hey, I had a question about elephant ears. I have an uncle that lives in South Bend, Indiana, and he does not pull his bulbs out on a regular basis. And from what I understand, you need to pull them up in this neck of the woods. So.
Right. They would not be reliably hardy outdoors. Now, one option would be to bring it inside if it's in a pot and treat it as a house plant. The other option is to leave it outside till you have a killing frost or freeze. Then cut off the dead foliage and then dig up that bulb-like structure, kind of like shaped like a coconut.
Correct.
And then get some packing material like, let's say, sphagnum moss or vermiculite and bury that structure in that material and then store it in a basically room temperature around 70 degrees.
Okay.
And I would probably take that structure in March and plant it again indoors in potting soil and moisten it so it begins to grow by early spring.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot for your call. And we have two quick questions here by email. This one's from Yasha. When and how is the best way to prune apple and pear trees?
You basically prune fruit trees, or should, in late winter, early spring, typically late March, early April, before they begin to leaf out.
All right. And this one, I have a very rocky area by my house that gets very little sunlight. Is there a plant or several that would do well in this environment? That's pretty challenging.
Mm.
Yeah, dry.
And well, rocky.
And rocky and shady.
And shady.
Mm-hmm.
Cacti? No,
no, they like sun.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh.
There are certain plants that will tolerate worse conditions like that. Like, you know, the go-to plant for dry shade, even though it doesn't prefer dry shade, is hosta. If it's too dry and rocky for that, there's barren wort's another one, epimedium. Lily of the Valley would probably grow there too. These are all plants that would prefer not to be in dry, rocky places, but will tolerate them.
Bishop's weed or gout mm-hmm. weed would be another.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So there are a few options at least to try.
Yes.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron is a horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension. Aaron Stile, assistant director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And, of course, we will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Claire Roth, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.